Okay, chances are you know someone or know someone who knows someone who's suffered from breast cancer, maybe even you yourself. Chances are also pretty good you've heard stories about women who have some kind of epiphany because of their diagnosis. Maybe they learn to forgive people more readily, stop sweating the small stuff, learn to live in the moment instead of in the past or the future. But what if said epiphany never happens? Did you miss some crucial part of the so-called journey? Worse still, are you just not reflective, even shallow maybe? These are questions that Shelley Lewis asked herself. She was diagnosed with breast cancer 4 years ago, and despite the huge community of support that's become the breast cancer industrial complex, she never found her place in that pink-hued world. She chronicles the experience in her new book. It's called Five Lessons I Didn't Learn from Breast Cancer, and One Big One I Did. Full disclosure, Shelley used to work with our producer, Dan Pashman. She joins us now in the studio. Thanks for coming in, Shelley.
Thank you for having me.
I assume that in light of your experience, you are not a big fan of the color pink.
Well, you know, I don't have a problem with the color pink. I like pink. And occasionally I wear pink now and people say, whoa, you're in pink. And I think like, no, you're kind of missing the point.
Explain
it's
your relationship
like pink
with it.
Incorporated that I'm not the biggest fan of.
And, pink, you know, ink?
Pink ink. There you go. Think pink ink, or think before you pink, as some people say. You know, it's not the color, and it's not even the ribbons. I think if that's what you want to do, if that's what gets you through the night, that's great. But I do feel that it's time to start looking beyond just the pink ribbons. Do you have to buy a pink dirt devil? Could you just give the money directly to whatever cause, you know, you want to support? And I'm extremely aware of the fact that this is called cause marketing, when you buy something and a portion of the proceeds go to a cause. But I just feel as though it's time to start saying, like, maybe we could just cut out the middleman. The cause marketing for breast cancer raises $30 million a year, and far be it for me to say we shouldn't do that. I think, you know, I hope it doubles next year, but I just would like it if people would be really mindful of what it is they're doing and think about, is that the choice they want to make, or do they maybe just, you know, this year they don't need another pink blender and they could just write a check to, you know, Susan Komen or whichever group they want to support.
In your book, you write a lot about your personal fight with cancer, with breast cancer. And, you know, in that world, a lot of people refer to themselves as survivors when they come out of this, as it is. And I just use the word fight. They use a lot of war language.
Right.
Why didn't you want to use that label, survivor?
Well, for me, and I know most people do use the word survivor, and a lot of people use it because there isn't a really great other choice. For me, a survivor is somebody who had a serious brush with death and didn't die, and who beat it, and who escaped. And I did not feel, because I was very lucky to have a very early stage breast cancer that was very treatable, I didn't feel that I had a brush with death. I felt like death sent me a postcard that said, thinking of you, you know, but it wasn't really a brush with death. Death was not at my doorstep, I didn't believe, and I wasn't at his or hers. And the other part of that is you have to be willing to say, okay, I escaped it. You know, if you're, God forbid, in a plane crash and you walk away, you are a survivor of that crash. With breast cancer, you can never say with certainty, it's gone forever, it's never coming back, I'm cured, because you just don't know. You don't know until you die of something else.
I want to ask you, if you would, to read an excerpt from your book. Do you mind doing that?
Not at all.
I've marked it right here, just this paragraph. It's about positive thinking and your take on that.
Okay. Since I'm not wearing my glasses, let me hold it way back. Here's a bit of advice I hope will be instructive. The minute someone tells you to cheer up when you just don't feel cheerful, or that you absolutely have to keep a positive attitude if you want to beat cancer, close your eyes and visualize yourself mooning that person. It will make you smile, and it will make him think that you're actually doing as he suggests. It also allows you to answer, oh, yes, if you're ever asked by the attitude police whether you use the power of visualization to help yourself heal.
Did you feel assaulted by the positive thinking police?
Yeah, well, yeah, and I am a positive thinker, generally speaking. I don't, who says, oh, the hell with it, I'm not fighting this? I mean, you don't.
Yeah.
I think we all, what the attitude police really want is to be able to give you a piece of advice, whether you ask for it or not, and to be able to say, it's really in your power to control if you just keep a stiff upper lip, if you just fight the good fight, if you're cheerful. But the other side of that coin is that if you're not, did you cause your own cancer? Is it your fault? You know, it's kind of a blame. It's not meant to be, but it is kind of a blame the victim mentality. And the other part of this is there's no scientific evidence that says that a positive attitude really has anything to do with your long-term prognosis. You'll feel better if you're feeling, you know, upbeat and optimistic, but nobody feels that way every day, let alone every day when they're going through cancer treatment. And it has to be, people should understand that it's okay to have cranky cancer days and to get depressed. It happens, and it won't make you sicker.
Your book definitely gives people permission to just be angry about the diagnosis. But at the same time, isn't there value? And you point out that the power of positive thought, it might not make the cancer go away, but it sure makes the process a lot more bearable.
Oh, absolutely. And I didn't have to, yes. And I think that's fine, but I think it's something that comes to you organically. I don't think someone can tell you, well, here's what you need to do. You need to be upbeat. It gives you this weird pressure and, you know, you start questioning, gosh, I'm not feeling upbeat. What's happening to me? You know, and that's really what my problem with it is. I really was optimistic. I never, ever for 1 minute thought I was going to die. I really didn't. It did not for 1 minute cross my mind that I would die from that breast cancer. I was very optimistic, but by the same token, I didn't want people telling me, fight the good fight, be a brave warrior. You know, you do the best you can do. Everybody's going to do the best they can do.
You know, I've never had cancer, and thank God a very close member of my family has never had breast cancer. But the thing that would get to me is just how the entire coping mechanism and the entire industry built around mm-hmm. this is pretty much defined by the mushy middle, like a bunch of, it seems like the same kind of crowd who would be collecting Hummel figurines or sending the most saccharine Hallmark cards. And to some extent, it just wouldn't appeal to my taste. It wouldn't speak to me. And
right.
I would feel that it was just thought police being forced upon me. And I'd want to opt out of that. That's the kind of person I am.
Well, you know, you can call me anytime because that was really me too. I mean, God bless. If angels and hope fairies get you through it, great. But for a lot of us, you know, we just wanted this to be, we didn't want it to sort of upset our lives and make us go on this quest to find something else. Cancer was a part of my life for a period of time. And to some extent, I guess it will probably always be a small part of my life. But I really did not buy into the kinds of things that you're talking about. The ones who do, it's very helpful for them. But I really wrote the book actually for those of us who really didn't find what they needed in that group.
Is there an alternative out there? Like if you said, here's what I'm interested in, statistics, cells, science, you know, you could save the puffy clouds for the person who cares because it ain't me.
Yeah.
Like, do you have to make the request? Is the information out there? Did people look at you like, why is she not part of our, you know, pink program?
Well, it is out there. There's a great organization called Breast Cancer Action. They're based in California in San Francisco. And they're all about, they're pretty political. They're activists. They have the Think Before You Pink movement, which is really great because they, actually, I was at Air America. And I had never even heard of them, and they reached out to us and said, you know, we want to talk about it. And it was very eye-opening for me to really start to understand that. As far as the medical, sure, there are, you know, Dr. Susan Love is really, really smart on research on what the real picture is. She was, she was early on about what hormones do to the body. I can't recommend her enough. And there are lots of websites where you don't have to buy anything. You can just learn things. And there are no hope angels anywhere to be found. And I appreciate those, too.
There is so much information that you can access. You point out, though, in the book that sometimes that information might not be what you need
right.
personally.
Right.
Internet chat rooms, for example.
Yeah.
Talk to us about what kind of pitfalls might lay out there for someone who has a diagnosis, is looking for a community of support.
Right. And that was, you know, I thought like, okay, I have breast cancer. Now I have to do the things you do with breast cancer. So I better find me a chat room.
Yeah.
And so I went to a chat room and there were all these women there and they were in, you know, serious you know, awful straits, talking about what they were going through. I found it very scary. I didn't understand all the vocabulary. And I didn't yet understand exactly that everyone's story is her own story. And
not just the story, the diagnosis.
Exactly. And that's what I mean by it, that everybody's cells are their own. And it felt to me as though I had stumbled into a ghost storytelling situation around a campfire where everybody was scary and scaring everybody else. And I did not want that. I found it not to be supportive. I found it to be scary and kind of a drainer. And so after the first time I thought like, okay, that's me. Something's wrong because everybody does this. So I went back a couple of other times and then I just thought, no, this is silly. I am not getting anything out of this. And it's actually harming me in some way. So I stopped. And I had a very good friend who called me as soon as she got her diagnosis. And she said, you know, I went to the chat rooms last night and I was so scared. I said to her, stay the heck away. And that's what she tells people now all the time.
You're not afraid, you say in your book, don't be afraid to play the cancer card. I just want to read a few of these. I loved this part of the book. Getting out of a speeding ticket. Sorry, officer, I'm late to a chemo session. I guess I was a little anxious to get there, you know, to save my life. Ask your mother for a family heirloom that you know your sister wants. Come on, mom, give it to me first, and then she can have it after I die. It's win-win. Order a bunch of stuff for yourself on QVC, and when it comes and your husband freaks out, blame it on chemo brain. The takeaway from all this stuff is that you need to have a sense of humor, too.
Yes, and there are times when something awful was happening to me, and I would say to myself, all right, this will be funny when I tell this story later. Right now, it's awful, but I could see that it was humorous, that when the chemo intravenous thing was beeping, warning, and I thought, okay, it may be that my head's going to explode, but if it doesn't, this will be a good story to tell later.
The title of the book is 5 Lessons I Didn't Learn from Breast Cancer. One big one I did. Explain what that lesson was.
The lesson for me, that the big lesson I did learn was that cancer doesn't change who you are. It verifies who you are to yourself, that you are the person you think you are, and your values and your experiences and your life lessons are what will get you through it. And, you know, if you have an epiphany, good for you. But a lot of us just find that it really, a situation like that really distills down what's important to you, how you cope, how you express yourself, you know, and how you look back on it, how you reflect back on it when it's over.
You did, though, make life changes, Shelley. You gave up Botox.
That's true.
You started yoga.
Yeah, although I kind of stopped.
And you also wrote this book. So, you know, you say that it's even harder for you to do work that you don't find meaningful now. Cancer changed your life, not necessarily who you are.
That's exactly right. Yeah, you know, of course you're going to make changes. I also eat organic food much more now than I used to. And I really do believe in, like, avoiding chemicals whenever possible. Yes.
And you get more speeding tickets, I'm sure.
Sure. No, actually, I don't. Not in Manhattan, anyway.
Well, I love the book. It's called 5 Lessons I Didn't Learn from Breast Cancer. One big one that I did. Shelley Lewis is the author. Thanks so much for coming in. We really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me.
And that does it for this hour of the Bryant Park Project, which is directed by Jacob Gans and edited by Trish McKinney. Our technical director is Manoli Weatherall.
Our staff includes Dan Pashman, Ian Chilog, Wynn Rosenfeld, Angela Ellis, Caitlin Kenny, Nathan Duhl, Zaina Barakat, and Jean Barron.
Laura Conaway edits our website and our blog.
Our newscaster is Mark Garrison.
Our senior producer is Matt Martinez. Sharon Hoffman is our executive producer.
I'm Mike Pesca.
And I'm Rachel Martin. And we don't go away. We're online all the time at npr.org/Bryant Park. Go there. Check us out online. This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.